Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Hoopla this week about Black Friday coming early. Stores opening earlier to shoppers on Thanksgiving Day. And who will be working in those stores on the holiday? Well, you can bet it will include a lot of part-timers. Part-time work is exploding in the weak U.S. economy. For many, it's all the work they can get. It's not enough. And more jobs may be headed that way. This hour On Point, stuck full-time in part-time work. You can join the conversation. Is this you, stuck in part-time? What's it pay? Does it work for you, your family? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Now, on Thanksgiving Day, there will be full-timers in there, too, but part-timers as well. Here was a Target employee. This is Casey St. Clair. She was on CNBC talking about an online petition she launched to protest being required to work on Thanksgiving Day for that early opening for the holiday season shopping rush. Thousands of people signed her petition, but the retail chain said it would open on Thanksgiving because customers wanted the hours there.
I value my job at Target. I enjoy working at Target. I just think that one day, retail is not a necessary service that needs to be open, and I don't think it's going to hurt. If all the companies did it on Friday, I don't think it's something that can hurt them.
And if you're part-time, all the worse. On October 9th, Walmart workers demonstrated in a dozen cities around the country, including Laurel, Maryland, where this unidentified Walmart employee told Russian television that demonstrators wanted more hours, better pay, and benefits.
We have to survive, too. We need more than minimum wages. We need living wages so that we can, you know, be able to support our family, be able to pay our rent, be able to buy groceries, be able to take our families out, and so they can have family trips and memories of these things.
Hard to do all that on part-time work, and it is getting harder. Joining me now from New York is Stephen Greenhouse, labor and workplace reporter for the New York Times. He's been writing on the big national move toward part-time work. Stephen Greenhouse, welcome back to On Point. Thanks for being here.
Always nice to be here, Tom.
So first, just to the big numbers, what is the trend in terms of the number of Americans now working part-time, being asked to work part-time, the percentage of Americans in that category?
So about 24 million Americans work part-time, Tom, and that represents nearly one-fifth of the workforce. And of that, those 24 million, about 8 million of them are so-called involuntary part-timers. They are working part-time, but they would much prefer to work full-time. And that number of involuntary part-timers has doubled over the past 6 years since 2006. And this is happening because a lot of companies, a lot of employers find it cheaper to employ part-timers. They pay them less per hour in wages generally. They provide them fewer benefits. And another big advantage to employers of employing so many part-timers is they have more flexibility. If you're a McDonald's and need to plug someone into the 12 to 2 lunch slot because you get busy, it's much easier to do that or increase your staffing at that moment by having part-timers. So it's great for many companies, but as the eloquent woman from Walmart you just had on said, it really is hard for workers because, you know, I've interviewed many workers who complain, all I'm assigned is 12 hours, 14 hours, 15 hours, 16 hours a week. And when you multiply that by $8 or $10 an hour, you get $120, $150, $160 a week. How in the world is someone supposed to support herself or himself or their families on that?
And that doubling since 2006, and even if you get the hours up higher, I mean, you talked to a woman in a recent story, Steve, makes $10.90 an hour, averages 28 hours a week, makes about $16,500 a year. Try raising a family on that, or even double that if you've got a husband doing it, and it's not, or a partner, and it's not just that it's part-time. You alluded to this briefly there, but this sort of just-in-time workforce, these new computer software programs that are scheduling people's part-time hours all over the map and always changing, what's that about? What's going on there?
So we heard a lot during the campaign that, you know, a lot of Americans don't want to work hard enough, that they just want to take free benefits. You know, when I did this big front page story a few weeks ago about the increase in part-time workers, I interviewed several workers, and I don't want to be sentimental and mawkish, Tom, you know, who, you know, start bursting out in tears in the middle of interviews. They say, I'm only assigned 15 hours a week, or this woman, Shannon Harden, who worked 26 hours a week at $10.90 an hour. They start crying. They say, I want so much to work full-time. I want so much to be able to support myself. But it's really, really hard the way the companies structure the hours. And one reason, you know, companies are shifting towards part-timers is there's this big development, this explosion, if you may, of sophisticated software that enables retailers and restaurants to very closely track customer traffic. You know, if there's a surge at lunchtime, if there's a surge on Friday evenings after 5 p.m. at a department store, they track. Their sales and their customer flow, and then they try to match the number of employees assigned at every given hour to that flow. And for companies, it's much, much easier to do that matching, to do that coordination when they have a ton of part-time workers to plug into their holes. When they have 90% full-time workers, it's much, much harder. And that's why I think a lot of companies prefer having a bunch of part-timers. It's much easier to, you know, to call them up and assign them to fill in the 12-to-2 hole or the 11-to-3 hole.
But that means their hours can jump all over the place and do it. It may just be 2 or 3 hours here, 2 or 3 hours there, and not necessarily the same 2 or 3 hours any given week, which means, of course, as you write, they can't arrange childcare on a steady basis. It's hard to have a second job if you don't know when your first part-time job is going to call on you. It's hard to get an education, try to better yourself. How do you do that when the employer might ask you to come in any time?
Exactly. When I set out to write this big piece on part-time workers, I was initially going to focus on just there are all these workers who have, you know, 12, 15, 18 hours a week and want full-time jobs. But in researching the story, Tom, I discovered another almost equally big complaint of these workers is the instability that their work schedules create in their lives. And I say instability because one week they might be assigned, you know, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. And the next week they might be assigned Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday from, you know, 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. And it creates havoc with their lives. It creates havoc in trying to, you know, in trying to arrange childcare and trying to get take college courses.
And if they block out time, Stephen, I'm reading here, if they block out time, they tell the employer, well, I'm not available here or there because of a second job or classes or whatever, they're likely to be moved down the list of those who are going to get hours at all. They'll get fewer hours.
Yes. Yesterday, I interviewed a Walmart worker in the Midwest who said, you know, months ago, she put in to have Thanksgiving Day off. And she said, sorry, we need you to work the 5 a.m. to 2 p.m. shift. We're not going to honor that. And wow. This woman was quite unhappy because she said traditionally she has her Thanksgiving dinner at 1 p.m.
Sure.
She's a 90-year-old mom. And that
she's
this,
a 90? Oh, she has a 90-year-old
no,
mom.
No, she's 61,
yeah.
And she has a 90-year-old mom. And she doesn't want to have a Thanksgiving dinner at 5 or 6 p.m. because it's hard for her.
Sure. It's Thanksgiving Day. Stephen, stand by there in New York. We've got callers here coming in. Elkhart, Illinois, Bill is calling. Hi, Bill. What's your experience?
Well, I am the shop steward for the airline that I work for here locally. And when we began operation in 2001 at this location, our company, we had 11 full-time employees and 4 part-time employees.
Yep.
And over the course of all the bankruptcies and everything, we're now down to 3 full-time employees. I've gone from top of a seniority list to the very bottom of the seniority list in full-time. We just lost 2 more. December 1st, we lose our 4th part-timer. December 15th, we lose our 5th part-timer, so we're down to 3. And these 2 individuals have done the math. They put a pencil to it. For where they live, they have to commute in, factoring in gasoline. They could grandfather, under our contract, take a part-time position and keep their health insurance. But the reduction in hours and the reduction in wages means that they can no longer afford the monthly premium for the insurance. They're about 35 years old, so they're going to throw the dice, lose their health insurance. They've actually done a calculation. They will make more money on unemployment insurance than they will make by taking an 18-hour-a-week part-time position.
Bill, how do you get all the work done with so many part-timers, overwhelmingly part-timers?
Well, what they do is exactly what your man was talking about, where they're scheduling surges. In the airline business, you're running banks of flights.
Right.
So at flight time, you're going to bring your part-timers in, I'll work them, you know, an hour before a flight to the hour after the flight, and then send them home.
And that's it.
And so that's it. That's what they do. You have a skeleton crew with a bare minimum the contract requires of full-timers throughout the day, and then at flight time, you bring in all your part-time help.
Bill, you're writing this trend line. Cast your mind forward. How does this work for working Americans if this is the trend, Bill?
Well, it's very simple. You look at this, the more part-time employees that these companies employ, obviously it reduces their wages, reduces their standard of living, turns their family lives upside down, and suddenly they have far, far less money in hand to spend buying the products and the services that these companies are selling. Henry Ford once said, any man working 40 hours a week in one of my shops can afford to buy one of my cars. That's no longer the case. They wonder why the economy's stagnating. It's because they're practicing labor arbitrage with all these part-time employees, and, you know, they're cutting their throat to isolate their stomach. That's the only way I can say it. Yep. It's Wall Street looking at short-term quarterly profits and no concept of a long-term success.
Bill, we're coming up on a break here, but I appreciate your call from Elkhart, Illinois, and good luck to you and all of your colleagues there. I mean, Stephen, there it is in a nutshell. I mean, you open the phone lines and boom, people are there to say, hey, that's me.
Bill makes many good points. You know, as I was saying, in many ways, this trend is good for companies because it helps them lower their costs and get more flexibility. And in ways, it's good for consumers because if a company can hold down its costs, then in theory, it could hold down its prices. And this trend makes it easier for companies to make sure there are enough employees on hand at any given time for customers. But again, for the workers, as Bill said, it leaves many of them without enough to feed their family. And because they are earning so little money, it in ways drags down the overall economy because there's not enough net demand to really increase economic activity.
And part-time work just exploding. Stephen, stand by. We're going to take a short break here. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour about American work going part-time, and not in a good way, the soaring number of Americans stuck in part-time jobs. Stephen Greenhouse is with us from New York, labor and workplace reporter for The New York Times, author of The Big Squeeze. We'll hear more perspectives on this from around the country. Steve, let me get our callers right in there, a lot of them on this vein. Andrea is calling from Hanover, Pennsylvania. Andrea, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. I love your show.
Thank you.
I actually work a fixed schedule. I work full-time. I originally was working, full-time until June 2011.
Mm-hmm.
Then I was unemployed. I found a part-time job working 4 days a week in January of this year. And in June, I was cut down to 3 days a week. And I have been having a terrible time finding a full-time position, and it really, really has impacted our income quite a bit.
Are you in retail, Andrea, or what field?
No, it's not retail. I actually work for an advertising agency, but, you know, because of the economy, people certainly are not advertising the way they used to.
Mm-hmm, right.
So it definitely is affecting me. I'm actually, when I saw that this was what your program was on, I was actually online searching for a hourly part-time job to get me through the holidays.
You mean to try and supplement the 3 days a week that you've got? Now, when you look around for jobs in your field, do you see a lot of part-time stuff advertised now, Andrea, or...?
I don't see a lot of part-time stuff advertised, but, the economy and the job market is just so hard that... You know, you almost have to take two part-time jobs. That's just to get a job, period.
And that, if you
two part-time jobs isn't enough money,
right? And that only if you can mesh the hours. And if your hours are moving around, how do you do it, Andrea? Good luck to you in Hanover, Pennsylvania. Let me get one more right here, John. Thanks, Andrea. John in Boston, you're on the air, John.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I work at Bloomingdale's, okay, Macy's Inc. And as the gentleman that was with you saying about the new scheduling system that the company generated or computer generated, and this new system, it's bad for the old workers, probably good for the new ones, and great for the part-timers because they can reduce hours in our business with our own clients. We don't have the same schedule. It used to be we cannot work additional half an hour or an hour, because they had to give the hours to the part-time people.
So you're full time, but it's not working for you because you can't pick up extra income. They fill the extra corners with part timers now, John. Is that it?
Yes, correct. Yeah.
Yes, please.
They had rather offer an extra hour, an extra day for a part time worker than a full time person.
Yeah, because it's going to be cheaper for them right there. So that's the little gravy that might come in handy for the full-timers as well. John, thanks for your call. Steve Greenhouse, I mean, you just get the feeling here about, you know, people, not literally, but sort of fighting over scraps here.
Yes. When unemployment is high, it's much easier for employers to say to someone looking for work, hey, we're going to give you a part-time job. You might want to work full-time, but this is all we have. And I think one thing many part-time workers are hoping for is that the unemployment rate now 7.9% will drop fairly significantly, because that will give them more leverage, more bargaining power when they're looking for jobs to, you know, demand a full-time job. For my story, Tom, I had interviewed this former Walmart store manager in Minnesota, and he said many part-time workers, many of them single mothers, would come into him and say, I need more hours. I'm not earning enough to support myself and my kid.
Right.
And he said, look, we just don't have the budget, the number of hours assigned, to give you more hours. And they'd say, well, then let me look for a second job. But then he would say, well, if you look for a second job, that means you won't be as available for Walmart every day of the week. So because you don't have as much availability, we're going to end up cutting your hours at Walmart. So a lot of these women concluded it's not even worth looking for a second job to increase their income, because they would lose their hours in their first main job at Walmart.
Wow. Talk about stuck. I mean, that's just stuck. And in the year ahead, we've got health reform coming in. I want to talk about how that may affect things here. But if I may, Stephen, let me bring in Susan Lambert, joins us right now from Chicago. She's a principal investigator on the University of Chicago Work Scheduling Study, tries to understand the business-employee relationship, how it's shifting. Associate professor in the School of Social Service Administration there. Susan Lambert in Chicago, thanks a lot for joining us.
Hello. Hi, Tom. Hi, Steve.
Susan, you've written about this kind of odd dynamic we have, where you've got some full-time people, some high-end employees who are asked to work like endless hours, beyond any 40-hour week. And then at the other end of the economy, you've got all these part-time workers who need more hours but can't get them. And you say this is all related somehow. How?
Well, it's the underlying incentive structures that are embedded in the way that we structure employment relationships between employers and employees in this country. And so at the upper end of the labor market, of course, many of us are paid by a salary, and we come with quite a few fixed costs. So we have the salary, we have benefits, and it is embedded financial incentive for employers to make really good use of our labor.
So maximize the time we're on email from home,
sure,
or watching the ticker over the weekend, or you name it.
Right. It doesn't cost them any more if we work 40 or 50 or 60 or 70 hours per week. At the other end of the labor market and the jobs that we're focused on today, workers come with very few fixed costs. As Steve pointed out, part-time employees, very few of them get benefits. And so, for example, in 2010, only 15% of part-time employees across industries got health insurance through their employer.
Mm-hmm.
As I think Bill was talking about, you can't afford the copays, even if it's offered to you. And so the incentive there for employers is to minimize the use of individuals' labor, because they only have to pay for it for every hour that somebody works. And so you get these labor flexibility practices that Steve has described in terms of these just-in-time labor practices, where schedules are posted at the last minute and demand is watched very closely. And when sales go down, for example, workers are sent home. And you need a few more, you call them in. And so you keep this very fluid workforce.
Boy, so top end, bottom end, top end working endless hours, bottom end never given that number that would get them to benefits or to a more livable income. Stephen Greenhouse, what defines part-time? Is it a one national definition? Is it different state by state? How many hours can you work and still be part-time?
There are many different definitions, Tom, and the Bureau of Labor Statistics generally defines part-time as anyone under 35 hours. I think most people would disagree with that. They think part-time would be under 30, under 25, maybe under 20. And there's no real good definition. The Bureau of Labor Statistics did a study, a very interesting study, that shows how much less part-time workers are paid per hour than full-time workers.
What did they find?
They did a study of, you know, service jobs. Mm-hmm. And for part-time workers with service jobs, their total compensation, combining wages and the value of their benefits, is $10.92 an hour. But for full-time service workers, their pay generally is 57% more, $17.18 an hour. And one reason that, you know, compensation for full-time workers is so much greater is that just 21% of part-time workers, say, get retirement benefits from their employer, just 21%, whereas for full-time workers, 65% do. Mm-hmm. So that might add another dollar and a half per
sure.
hour for compensation. I think many employers say, hey, it might be much cheaper to have two workers working 20 hours a week, making $8, $9 an hour, than having a full-timer making $10, $11, $12 an hour and having to provide the full-timer with good benefits.
And what about the fields? I mean, we've heard about retailing. Hospitality is another one where it's not just two times the 06 level. It's 2.5 times, you report. 30% in retailing alone. Part-timers want full-time jobs but can't get them. You're describing up from 10.6 in 2006 when maybe that's all they wanted. What about beyond retailing and hospitality? Where's it showing up, Susan, Steve, both?
Susan, you go.
Well, I was just going to say, I've been studying these scheduling and staffing practices for a number of years now, and I've studied them in hospitality, financial services, which is in banks, transportation, the airlines, as Bill just talked about, and package handling, and also retail, not just in the, you know, kind of brick and mortar, but also in distribution centers. Mm-hmm. And in all those different areas, what we see are these kinds of scheduling practices and, you know, this just-in-time scheduling with schedules posted at the last minute, hours varying from week to week. What tends to happen is it takes a slightly different form in different industries, but basically you've got a kind of a core group of workers who are often the full-time, and they get pretty steady schedules, and then you've got another proportion of workers whose hours vary all the time and who they can't count on getting either the same schedule or the same number of hours. And so all the instability kind of in the business is concentrated on them. And what we see happening is that proportion is just growing over time. So it used to be like 20 years ago, the part-time, full-time ratio in retail was, you know, 70% full-time,
yep.
30% part-time, and now that has flipped.
But, of course, I mean, in fairness, everybody's struggling to keep their head above water here, including many employers, no doubt, and maybe this is part of the way they're doing it, but gosh, if you're the worker, West Point, Georgia, Phil, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hey, what do you know?
Just listening to some great comments here and wanted to share that the scheduling softwares that a lot of the companies and businesses are using have been around for over 20 years.
Yeah.
And part-time workforce has been around for a long time. And as an employer, it seems to me that the biggest driving factor, and I think there have been some that have commented on this, is the economy. I would only hire part-timers when I could. It would seem that when the economy was doing really well, I couldn't find a lot of part-timers. But almost always, I would say every single time I hired a part-timer, I would always ask them, are you looking for full-time work? Because if you're looking for full-time work, this isn't going to be the job for you.
Okay.
So I would have that conversation with them and to keep them, because I didn't want to have that burden of them not being happy where they're working and then losing them to go somewhere else.
Right.
So we understood as a part of our profitability, because if we weren't profitable, we would get fired or they would close our business model down. You know, we had to have a certain ratio or mixture to meet our business demands and to grow our business. So we would always have, like, the lady was saying, a 30% mix or a 40% mix, whatever it was,
yep.
and use that scheduling software to know where to put them. But we had a very happy and a very well-paid part-time employee workforce, and that's how we kept our turnover down. So I think there's some additional research that might need to be done, because I'm also seeing a trend where some employers are actually paying their part-timers more than their full-time employees because they need them so much strategically to grow their business profitably. And that's been the key turning point over the past, I'd say, 10 years since I've been an employer hiring part-timers.
That's an interesting employer perspective. I mean, Steve Greenhouse, there's a kind of chicken and egg thing here. You know, our first caller said, Bill in Elkhart, Illinois, you're not going to have, Indiana, you're not going to have an economy that works if you got everybody part-time. As Steve says, you're not going to have full-time workers if you don't have a better economy.
I think the caller said this is happening largely because of a weak economy, which makes it easier for employers to, you know, demand, you know, to hire part-time workers, harder for workers to say, I want full-time work rather than part-time work. You know, Susan Lambert has found that this trend has been developing for many years, and it really started to spike in 2006, which is really 2 years before we saw the major downturn. And for my story, I interviewed several major software developers. Mm-hmm. And yes, the caller's right that there's been some scheduling software around for two decades, but it's become far, 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 far more sophisticated over the past 5 or 10 years. And these software developers told me, the presidents of the software company said, in the past 5, 6 years, there's new software that's much more sophisticated that makes it far easier for companies to, you know, track, you know, to track customer traffic and sales traffic and match in by 15-minute increments the optimal number of employees that you would want by every 15-minute increment to serve customers best and to have enough people at the cash registers and enough people at the sales floor to answer customers' questions. So I really think that this more sophisticated software has also fueled this increase in the number of part-time workers.
Susan, how do you look at this? You know, evil employers or a big, just a bad economy that's forcing all kinds of people, employers included, to take steps that were no longer, that were used to be very rare to survive. If it goes back before the downturn, it's doubly confusing to sort that out.
Well, I think that the economic downturn has highlighted and exacerbated the implications of practices that employers have been trending toward for the last 30 years. And we've been talking about this for a couple of decades now, but in kind of in different language. So people have been talking about, you know, in the last 20 years, you know, you can't count on staying with the same employer anymore, you know.
But that's different from saying there won't be full-time work.
Yeah, but that's
somewhere.
But what has happened is that in the last 30 years, we've moved away from what we have thought of, at least coming out of World War II, of a standard employment, which is full-time, steady hours, you know, Monday through Friday, yeah. 9 to 5 yeah. for a lot of people. Now, a lot of people didn't enjoy that, like women and workers of color were always mm-hmm. kind of left out of that. Mm-hmm. But that was kind of the standard. And right now, less than 25% of Americans have those kinds of hours who are in the workforce. And so we've seen this kind of move away from standard employment. It's taken different forms.
Less than 25% have yes. standard employment today?
Yes.
Incredible.
Can yes. I just it's no longer standard.
Yeah, Stephen?
Sure. Yes. So a few years ago, Tom, you very nicely had me on your show when I was discussing my book.
Yeah.
And, you know, back then we talked about several trends where, you know, that employers have adopted that are great for employers in reducing their labor costs and increasing their profits, but they haven't been great for workers. One, of course, and has been going on a long time, is outsourcing jobs overseas. Another is the increasing use of temporary workers, which is, again, a way to get workers at low cost without providing them with benefits. Another thing we've seen, an increase in the number of independent contractors. That's another way to hire workers without paying them benefits. So I think this move to part-time is just another trend where companies very intelligently for themselves find ways to hold down their labor costs, often at the expense of the welfare of the people who work for them.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about American work going part-time, and not in a good way, not in a welcome way for many American workers. The soaring number of Americans stuck today in part-time jobs. Susan Lambert joins us from the University of Chicago. Stephen Greenhouse is here, labor and workplace reporter for the New York Times. A couple of different angles here from people online on Facebook. Joe says, listen, lots of fields involved in this. Joe says, I'm an adjunct faculty member, which means part-time. In a way, I understand universities' decisions to rely so heavily on part-time workers. Supply is high. You can hire plenty of people for low pay, no benefit. Students don't seem to mind, but I can tell you, Joe writes, it leaves him wanting to leave education as soon as he can to find something else. Well, good luck. Babette writes, really, I have no sympathy. I've been completely unemployed for over 4 years now. For those of you with part-time jobs, be glad you have any income at all. No one seems to have gratitude anymore. Well, be glad for anything. I mean, Babette, we get it, out being out of work for 4 years, but isn't that what Scrooge said? Be glad for anything. Hey, Victoria, Columbia, South Carolina, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom.
Hey.
I'm actually coming from a little bit of a different perspective.
Okay.
I'm a part-time supervisor at Starbucks.
Okay.
And my manager is just really great. Excuse me. She's always willing to work with people, and you know, we get priorities as far as, you know, who wants off for which holiday.
Victoria, what's your status? Are you single, married, in school, a parent? What?
I am married, and I have a one-year-old son, and I get the benefit of being both a stay-at-home mom and working.
So it works out for you. What about your husband or partner? Do they have full-time work?
Yes, he works full-time. He's a school teacher. And so we can, when he gets off work, he can kind of swing home and take over parenting.
So for you, it works out pretty well. What if he didn't have full time? What if you were both part timers? How would that work?
Well, I would have the flexibility at work to pick up more hours when he is off for the summer or for Christmas break. I can pick up more hours as I need to.
So for you, it works out pretty well.
Yeah, I just think it has so much to do with, you know, the company that you're working for and the manager that you're under. And then it's a company that you're working for. Are they, you know, nothing but business, or are they also interested in their partners? Like I said, I work for Starbucks.
And, yeah. Listen, Victoria, we're glad it works for you. I mean, there have always been, Susan, Stephen, there have always been people whose life circumstances and the whole picture of their income made part-time work appealing for them. Susan, here's one. A year-old son, she's happy to have part-time work, and it works out well for her, Susan.
Right, and it does work out for some, but for a growing, as Steven said before, for a growing proportion of Americans, it's driven involuntarily, whether they're voluntarily. And I think we do want to point out that it's not just young people. I mean, 70% of people working part-time are 25 or older. And for example, when we look among part-time workers among men who are working part-time, for example, who are 25 or over, 51% of them are doing it involuntarily.
So they want more. They need
more hours.
Tom, so when I was researching my story, I took a look at Starbucks. And Starbucks got very high marks because it assures more stability to its workers, because when, you know, if I go into my local Starbucks at 8:15 in the morning every day, mm-hmm. I want to see Victoria and her beautiful smile there each morning. I don't want to see a different group of workers every day. So Starbucks tries very hard to assure that, you know, Monday through Friday, the same people are there, say, from 7 a.m. to 11 a.m., mm-hmm. and a different group maybe from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. And Starbucks gets high marks for stability of scheduling, and it provides more benefits to part-time workers than do many other companies.
Let me bring in Carrie Gleason. She joins us from San Diego in California. She's executive director of the Retail Action Project. It's a retail workers advocacy group. Carrie, thank you very much for joining us from San Diego.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
What are you working on? What's your goal?
Well, we have just launched the Sustainable Scheduling Campaign. It's workers and communities coming together to really achieve the family-sustaining jobs that are becoming scarcer and harder to find. We're both workers are organizing against this around the country. In New York City, Abercrombie and Fitch workers just launched a major online petition against on-call shifts and scheduling. As well as we're also about to introduce legislation that is really going to shift the policy picture that we're facing. Policies have not kept up with the realities of this growing part-time workforce.
Carrie, what's an on-call shift? Maybe I get that, maybe I don't. What's that? What can that mean?
Well, it used to be, you know, your manager calls you, hey, you know, so-and-so sick, can you come in today? Mm-hmm. Now there's actually pre-scheduled on-call shifts. Abercrombie & Fitch is probably the worst player of this.
But what does it mean?
So Gap and Banana Republic use it. It's an on-call shift where workers are required to call in 2 hours before their shift to find out if they're working. And for working moms, how do you arrange childcare in 2 hours? There's absolutely no cost to the employer to have their entire workforce on call.
Are they paid to be on call? Are they paid something? Nothing.
They're nothing. And so that's one of the policy areas that we're looking to. There should be some kind of cost to the employer. They're doing this because it's free, but the workers are paying the cost. They have to arrange for childcare. They have to be available for work. And it's the ways in which the retail industry is really fueling this crisis of underemployment. Workers are waiting at home to work. They want to go to work.
Which means they can't have a second job.
By the phone. Of course.
They can't be doing something else then.
Yes, and we have members of the Retail Action Project that have these keep their second job secret. One member was working at Victoria's Secret and then got a second job across the street at Banana Republic. Well, when her Victoria's Secret manager saw her working at Banana Republic, she gave her all on-call shifts. And this is because demand open availability. Workers are now saying when they have reasonable scheduling requests, I have a class that day, or I need to go to the doctor. They're losing that shift permanently.
But that makes workers, it's no longer free labor at that point. I mean, there's an element of coercion here that's almost kind of like, indentured servitude.
Yeah, there's a great quote about comparing this just-in-time scheduling to sharecropping, where these retailers are trying to squeeze more and more productivity out of workers as they're getting, you know, shrinking hours. And this trend is, I've seen this trend grow since 2006. At JCPenney in 2006, you could work a full-time job with health insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Now JCPenney workers, the store has expanded. They've essentially become day-labored. Schedules change from last minute, and the burden is on the worker to find out if their schedules work. So workers will call every day to find out what their shift is.
What do you say to the retailers then, Carrie, who say, look at the reality. People go bankrupt. It's a tough world. It's a mm-hmm. tough economy. We've got to do this, or we won't be in business, or our prices will be too high for recession-strapped Americans to afford.
The truth is that retailers don't need to turn to this unpredictable just-in-time scheduling. If you look at unionized retailers represented by the Retail Wholesale Department Store Union, Macy's, Herald Square, it's the company's top, most profitable company. Those workers now have the ability to schedule shifts 6 months in advance. Part-time workers have guaranteed hours and are able to pick more shifts up through the scheduling software. The scheduling software doesn't have to be the death of predictability or part-time or full-time work. But the difference is, you know, what is the company's approach to this? And when workers have some ability to have a say in their schedule, it can mean a lot in terms of workers' ability to balance their work life.
You've named a lot of big national retailers with this on-call kind of system, I guess. Does what happens then to smaller retailers? Are they forced to do something similar to compete? Or, I mean, does it sort of, infect? if the big ones do it, everybody has to do it?
I think that we're seeing this trend in major corporate retailers. It's not as much following to the smaller regional change
mm-hmm.
because it's really the, you know, scheduling people for 4 hours a week or 10 hours a week. How do you do that without sophisticated scheduling technology? So it's really the companies that have implemented the scheduling technology where you're seeing the worst of this trend. Abercrombie and Fitch workers will see their hours capped at 10 hours a week. Their flagship store probably has 1,000 workers.
Wow.
it's just, it's, you know, and so, you know, it's linked to this job creation, but this job creation is linked to this crisis of underemployment. And the public cost of this underemployment is huge. These workers cannot survive on these unpredictable part-time schedules. What we're looking at, though, is that this trend is not impacting everyone the same. Our discounted jobs research found that women, as well as Black and Latino workers, are hit hardest by this trend. These on-call scheduling that I'd spoken about,
yep.
We found that a majority of women were facing these on-call shifts. A majority of women who are mothers were facing these on-call shifts, as opposed to just 43% of the rest of the surveyed workers. So this means that mothers working in retail are forced to arrange for childcare last minute, balance their family responsibilities last minute, and it's really about the ability to fully participate in the workforce. The stress that retail workers are facing, trying to juggle, you know, shifts that change last minute, is growing.
That is a pretty tough schedule to ride. Carrie Gleason, stand by there in San Diego. Dave in Des Moines, Iowa. Dave, you're on the air.
Thanks, Tom. One word, unionize. I'm a Teamster. If you guys want dignity in the workplace, you're going to have to fight for it. If this election cycle taught us anything, there's a small oligarchy trying to put the squeeze on us, and we're living in fear, and we have to push back and not be in fear. It's hard. You have to take responsibility for your working environment. I work in a Teamster shop. It's a dynamic thing. It's not either or, management or labor. It's every day. Management's trying to get it done. Labor's pushing back, and we negotiate on an hourly basis, sometimes on a half-hourly, 15-minute basis. This is the new workforce. There are jobs out there. There is work out there. They can't outsource any more jobs, Tom. There's no place to go. We can't take them to China anymore. We can't take them to Mexico anymore.
Well, don't be so sure. I don't know, Dave, but let me ask you something. We've just heard Carrie describe a big retailer where you might have 1,000 workers at a big store, each of them capped at 10 hours a week. So there's 1,000 people just working a little bit each. How do you unionize in that kind of situation, Dave?
Well, I've seen it happen, Tom. You know, everybody's afraid. Everybody, but look at this election. Everybody was afraid. We elected President Obama anyway. It's little tiny steps. You have to take a stand. You have to take a stand for your own dignity. It comes down to a personal responsibility decision about your own life.
Teamster Dave, we've got it. Let me hold that thought right there. Unions, you say, is the answer. Let me get one more. We'll come to it. Terry, thank you, Dave. Terry in Lexington, Kentucky. You're on, Terry.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I had a couple of perspectives. One was a lot of your companies are pressured right now because of Obamacare mandating insurance.
Yeah.
Premiums. But if the government, along with that, would give high incentives to employers for each employee that they had insurance coverage on, I think that that would help.
So some kind of incentive, get the government to put a finger on the scales. Stephen Greenhouse, two things. And first, I mean, you cover labor. What about unionizing here? And then what about the impact of the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, when it comes in? You've got employers saying because of its requirements for health care coverage, that may be a further disincentive for them to have full-time workers.
I'm glad you asked, Tom. To respond to Dave, the Teamster, yes, unionization might help these retail workers, might help them a lot. But as Dave recognizes, it's extremely hard nowadays to unionized low-wage retail workers. They're very scared, and the companies fight back very hard. Yes, as for Obamacare, you know, under Obamacare, beginning next year, the year after, companies for employees with more than 30 hours a week, if they don't provide those workers with health coverage, they might have to pay a penalty of $2,000 per employee. And I think as a result, we're seeing some employers, and the head of Papa John's said this was happening at Papa John's, they're moving some workers to full-time, 30-hour-a-week workers to part-time so they won't have to pay this penalty. This is a new trend. It's unclear whether these companies were going to move the people to part-time anyway or just blaming Obamacare as a reason. But this trend towards part-time workers, you know, predated Obamacare. One other quick point.
Mm-hmm.
One complaint I often heard about this is that the taxpayer is ending up subsidizing this phenomenon. You know, we talk, Tom, about all these workers who work 15, 20, 25 hours a week, only make $15,000, $20,000,
$25,000
a year. As a result, they're turning to food stamps. Many of them turn to Medicaid for themselves and their kids.
Sure.
Some are even on welfare. And, you know, some advocates I've interviewed said this is unfair that we have the government subsidizing these retailers, these restaurants, to not give these workers enough hours, you know, to support themselves and their families.
Carrie Gleason, what's your leverage then? You're working to try and change this. What's your leverage?
Well, I mean, this, in part, you know, we need to draw attention to this problem. So it's great to see this issue gaining so much attention in the media. You know, we're facing a crisis, and I think that we're going to see workers taking action more. Walmart workers are looking to walk out. Walmart's been the innovator on these just-in-time scheduling practices. Workers across the country are really starting to, they have nothing to lose. You know, if you can only get 10 hours a week, well, you know, you either have to create the job that you need to support your family because quitting and moving on to the next retailer, you're not going to find new different practices. So really the fight for the 40-hour work week has returned for retail workers who are really, it's about the fundamental right to work and meet basic living expenses. In terms of leverage, well, this just-in-time scheduling practice is leading retailers to violate the law. We're finding that the typical patterns of discrimination are falling into scheduling. A full-time job is now a promotion, and so what we're finding is that white workers are more likely to get this promotion than black and Latino workers. We found a majority of black and Latino workers in our research were part-time, whereas only 29% of white workers were. And so we're looking, you know, for legal leverage. We're also finding violations of laws like the call-in pay law, where if I get sent home early, I should get a four-hour shift pay. And so we're seeing wage theft at major corporate retailers because this drive for flexibility is leading them to just ignore fundamental workplace standards.
Well, what a picture. A full-time job is now a promotion. You three have us eyes wide open going into this shopping season. Carrie Gleason with the Retail Action Project in San Diego. Thank you very much for being with us today, Carrie.
Thank you, Tom.
Susan Lambert at the University of Chicago. Thank you so much, Susan.
Thank you.
And Stephen Greenhouse, New York Times, thanks as always, Stephen.
Thanks so much, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.